Business Matters in association with the LYIT Faculty of Business. Do you want to learn how to tap into unprecedented opportunities in the food and drink industry? Then join our Higher Diploma in Food Product Innovation and Enterprise. This course is 100% online and co-funded by Donegal Local Enterprise Office. Visit lyit.ie for more information.
Hi, I'm Kieran O'Donnell. You're welcome to Business Matters. Later in the programme, I'll be speaking to Ardra singer-songwriter Tanya McColl. But first, I caught up with Head of Enterprise at Donegal Local Enterprise Office, Michael Tunney, for September's Backing Business segment. As Michael explained, it's been a busy time for the organisation that supports small businesses.
Yeah, it's been a busy year to date. Over the summer, I suppose one of the key things we were doing was delivering a lot of the Brexit programmes that were approved last year. There was a suite of five programmes there between retail, export, financial management, innovation. So those are completed. I think there's a bit of mentoring outstanding in one. And at the same time then, since I think it was February last, we've been working on a 10-year strategic enterprise plan for the county. We had OCO Global, and we engaged with a lot of businesses, a lot of the stakeholders, but also, interestingly, members of our diaspora in Dublin and overseas. And it has thrown up some challenges for the county, but also some interesting solutions.
What are the main challenges, Nicola, through it?
Well, really, what I identified too, Kieran, is that for a county of our size, for example, the level of startups we have is on a par with Longford and Leitrim. Right, so we're significantly larger, more critical mass. So that was one. Our disposable income, average disposable incomes in the county is the lowest in the country. When we talk about value added and manufacturing, again, the lowest level in the country, very significantly, probably a third of what it is in other counties. And the whole area of the skills challenge we have, like if we're going to get inward investment and we're going to get indigenous investment, and this is COVID aside, that we just don't have enough people, skilled labour here. So if we wanted to achieve, what the plan says, if we want to achieve what we're saying in the plan, if we want to become a county in the top five in the country for business and investment, then we're going to have to do something around skills, either import people or really, really ramp up what we're doing in third level, second level, and through the ETB and vocational skills.
What is the best solution from your perspective?
Well, again, the plan says there's no one solution. So what we're suggesting is that we're kind of trying to build it on four pillars. So one is around investment, another is around skills, another one is around really driving innovation. But then it also says, and these are the sectors you should really work in. So this kind of, there's some opportunities there. They've obviously taken what we have, work we're doing already in food, the creative sector, the blue economy out of Killybegs, but also it has identified patient-centric healthcare within the healthcare sector. There's things happening in LYIT and also in Darien, in Citric in there, and in Elton Galvin, bring those together. And it's really, it kind of also mentions about that opportunity of Donegal, Derry, Strabane. You get that critical mass. So it's going to say in those, and it talks about seven sectors, develop a kind of a roadmap. But within that, then you identify what are you going to be doing with skills? What are you going to be doing with new startups? What are you going to do in trying to get your diaspora to take really an active role in promoting the county, either for immigrant investment or indigenous investment? So a roadmap for each of those. And then it does suggest a new structure. So a structure that's primarily going to be led by private sector. So private sector chairperson, 50-50, any of these. On each pillar, there'll be a private-public kind of working group, but again, chaired by private sector. And I suppose, I'm honest, when I sit and look at it, I'm saying as well, I think I would like that those people would be in the, dare I say, they'd be significantly younger than you and me, Kieran. I would like, we'd be 35 to 45, people who have a long-term future in the county and have a vested interest in the county. So, we're bringing it to the Donegal County Council for formal adoption now next week, and hopefully then we'll get into that implementation. But it's going to be 10 years, and it acknowledges that.
So, that was my next question. The time scale, 10 years, is it going to be sort of broken down in terms of reaching targets over that 10-year period?
Yeah, I think the actions, and we already started some of the stuff, because one of the things it suggests in each of those sectors, there should be an accelerator program every year, which is quite significant. So we've finished our first tech accelerator there during the summer as well. So again, we had, I think, 11 business or startups there in that tech accelerator. And then hopefully we'll get maybe three or four good startups out of that and some of the investments, and we've just started then our second pre-accelerator for female entrepreneurship that will feed into that. But that, As I'm saying, that requires now a commitment in the Leo and the other actors, Enterprise Ireland, Lutheran and Gaelic, the IDA, Donegal County Council, you know, the tourism sector, to commit. And thankfully, you know, we've had discussions with a number of the sectors, food, engineering, the blue economy, and the creatives, and they're on side in tourism, so they're on side. And now it's just getting those roadmaps and then looking at the implementation.
You mentioned tourism. Obviously, the home tourism has benefited this year, given the fact that people couldn't travel. Is tourism going to be a focus for investment going into the future and tourism on a regional basis, say?
Well, I think so, both regional and local. I mean, again, we were saying, and I know I'm talking to Anne-Marie Conlon and Donegal County Council, and they're developing a new strategy around tourism. Obviously, there's a huge commitment there already on significant, you know, your iconic projects, and some additional investment has been received, but also investment in town enhancement and some of those strategic towns and villages that's planned. But I think tourism will be. Again, the plan is kind of saying what you need now in tourism in Donegal is not to focus on, you know, the weekend or coming for 2 days. Get somebody and try and keep them in the county for 5 days, 6 days, you know. So that's because I think international sort of research would show that somebody comes to a county, you know, they initially maybe plan a long weekend, but if you can encourage them to spend the next 2 nights, because that's when they haven't planned their expenditure, that's when they'll spend, you know,
the second spend,
and it's generally more than what they've budgeted for the first 2 or 3 days. So that's kind of that will probably require, I think, repackaging of some of the products we have, whether that's the golf, you know, whether it's the, you know, the co-steering, the kayaking, the trail walk, whatever it is, you know, the cycling, all of those activities, because I think Donegal, to me, Donegal really needs to develop itself in tourism around the activities that we have, yeah, and the landscape we have to go with it.
And has the pandemic in a positive way served to sort of remind us how much we have to market and how much we have to offer here?
Absolutely, Kieran. I think over the last 2 years, I mean, last year was phenomenal. I think those couple of months, and I know even again this year, I know talking to people around the country and the Leo Network and other organisations, you know, coming to Donegal still for the first time. You know, unfortunately, you know, they weren't coming far enough out of the county probably, but they were stepping into the county, and any of them had been, we're talking about, you know, have to go back, you know. So I think it has opened us up to a southern part of the country that didn't come this far north. And maybe that was maybe linked to that perception of how far north we might have been and the troubles as they were, and they still hadn't overcome that kind of a hurdle they had in their own minds. But yeah, I think tourism is huge potential for the county, but it's how we lengthen the season and how we add the value. I think the two challenges there.
Finally, Michael, a lot of work was done on Zoom, and a lot of courses and a lot of things were delivered online. Has there been a return now to actual courses and actual...
Yeah, there's not just yet, Kieran. We're still continuing to do our programs online. There will be, for example, there's an Understanding Export series coming up now and starting the 6th of October. That'll be online. But we are talking, we're meeting clients now one-to-one. We're actually going back out now doing site inspections when it comes to grant aid on a one-to-one basis. So we're just, first of all, I suppose, getting people in the office comfortable doing that. So we're doing a bit of that, and we have our EVACs, you know, we're evaluation committee. We're meeting in person now. So I think, and we're talking now, you know, we're talking about a couple of events before the end of the year where we will be in a room with people come November, December. And we know from some of the European projects as well, Kieran, that international partners, there's a group of 30 of them coming here now the first week of November. Because they haven't said no, we're ready to, and we're coming to the Donegal for it. So it is opening up, but I think, you know, it'll be probably blended, and we're planning for Enterprise Week 2022, so first week of March next year, where we are probably saying, look, we're going to plan for face to face, but we'll also have the tech and the technical capability if need be, depending what's happening, to make it a blended one. So I think it's going to be still a while before we're all comfortable getting big numbers. But again, we have one cluster in the county, and they themselves decided, no, we've had enough of the Zoom. So 2 weeks ago they met, and 15 of them met in a room at a meeting, you know, socially distanced. But and the feedback from one of my colleagues who was there facilitating, like, just they were delighted to be back. It was far more exchange of ideas, talking about their businesses, than they would on Zoom. So yeah, I think it'll take time, but definitely it's coming, hopefully.
Michael Tunney, Head of Enterprise at the Donegal Local Enterprise Office in Letterkenny. Thanks for taking the time today to talk to us on Business Matters.
Thank you very much, Kieran.
And there, we'll take a break.
Business Matters, in association with the LYIT Faculty of Business. Accelerate your workforce by enrolling them in one of our lifelong learning courses today. Visit lyit.ie for more information. LYIT Faculty of Business, designed by industry, delivered by experts.
You're welcome back. The live music industry has suffered greatly over the last 18 months as a result of the pandemic. Tanya McCall from Ardragh is one of Ireland's most talented singer-songwriters. In 2018, she realised a lifetime ambition when she was invited to tour with her idol, John Prine. Her career was very much on an upward trajectory when COVID-19 hit in March 2020 and all her best laid plans were placed on hold. I spoke to Tanya in McGinley's Bar on Letterkenny's Main Street, where she's been a regular performer for many years.
Delighted to be joined on Business Matters by singer-songwriter Tanya McCall from Ardragh. Tanya, you're welcome to Business Matters.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Tanya, it's been a long 18 months. We're starting to get back to some sense of normality. Music has been your gig for many years now. Yep. Was music always your thing?
It was always my thing. Knee-high to a grasshopper. I was one of those kids. Was never quiet. Always singing. You know, I left for England in 1996, I think it was. No, 1993. With no intentions of doing music. I ended up working in building sites in England. Came home to Ireland, met up with some people in Galway, and the rest is history. I just have been music ever since.
Take me back maybe to the early days for a minute. Growing up in Ardragh, and as they say, after you left, you got a job in Killybegs.
That's right, I did. I worked in the fish factory there in Killybegs, and it was cold. And I remember earning more money than my dad earned. He was a sergeant, and I was earning more money than Dad.
Was that your first job, was it?
It was my first job, and Dad says, you know, a year or two here, and you'll have, you know, a mortgage, a down payment for a house, and I was like, nope, not happening, Dad. It's too cold. I'm out of here. I don't care how much money I'm earning. I'm out of here.
And how did you end up in London?
I had relatives over there, and they said, listen, if you want to come over, come over. And it was either Peterborough or London, and London was more exciting. And I had no job, no qualifications, no leaving cert. So I thought, what am I going to do? I had an uncle who owned machinery, and he says, if you can get in and drive that and not break it, you have a job. So I did. And that's what happened for the next 3 years.
Did you enjoy that?
Oh, I loved it. Outdoor work suits me down to the ground. I love it. Yeah. And I was good at it, you know, I was probably one of the only women on the site. I worked in Chessington World of Adventures, which would be the sister theme park to Thorpe Park. It was an experience. It was fabulous. I loved it.
Any one standard memory from that time?
Yeah, we had a day one time where we had built these lion cages, and we put bulletproof glass into the cages so that the public could get closer to the lion and tigers. So the big reveal day came, and we let the lion and tigers out, and the lion, he made a direct beeline for the glass, and he stopped short, but a stone hit the glass, and the next thing, the cracks started to appear in the glass, and you never saw a sight clear as quick in all your life.
Did you stay or did you run?
Oh, I ran for the digger and locked myself in it. I thought, if he comes for me, at least I'm in the digger with the bucket, you know. But the glass was faulty, and I'll tell you, that was a scary day, but it was very funny as well.
Why did you say to come back to Ireland?
I missed home. It's funny, the grass is always greener when you're younger. I wanted out of Ardragh. It was quiet, it was boring. I got to London, it was exciting, it was fabulous, but I missed that personable relationships that you had with people. I missed that. Hello on the street, or how's it going? You don't get that in big cities. And I found the draw pulling me back to Ireland, you know. I had to go back.
Were you a different person when you came back?
Yes and no. I thought it was more worldly, you know, but I suppose, Ireland was a wee bit slower than London, obviously, but I probably was the same person.
So where did you relocate to when you came back?
I moved back to Donegal first and into Ardragh for a couple of weeks, and I was like, nah. So I headed to Galway. I had a brother in Galway, Shane, and I stayed with him. I got a job in a hotel, cleaning rooms, and I lasted 2 days doing that. And I said to Shane, I'm going to Galway City with my guitar to busk. because at least I can make money doing that.
And were you busking in London? And were you busking at home?
No. Nope. First time ever busking. But I knew I didn't want to work in the hotel, changing sheets.
And was there one moment where you decided, I'm going to busk, or was it something that you always sort of harbored ambitions about doing?
No, it was just a moment. It was a monetary moment. I needed money. And how else do I make money? What can I do? What am I good at? Oh, I can sing. So I took my guitar and I headed to Shop Street. And a guy kept walking over and past me a few times after a week or two of this. And he said, you're a good singer. And I said, thanks. And he says, there's a local band looking for a singer. You should go and audition. He says, their auditions are closing today. So I said, okay. I packed up, I headed down, knocked on the door. The band were there and they went, sorry, we've picked a singer. I said, that's okay. And one of them said, sure, come in and sing a song anyway. And I went, okay. So I think we did Mustang Sally. And I could see the boys looking at each other.
Was that your party piece, was it?
It was at school. Right. The commitment was the party piece at school, you know. And the lads were all looking at each other. And I left and they took my number. And like 20 minutes later, you got the job. And I said, what about the other girl? And they were like, she'll be all right, you know.
So was that the start of a completely new journey for you?
Yes, that was it. That was the start of my new journey, yeah. I mean, I always wanted to do music. Music was in my blood. It really, really was. And before I'd left for London, I had been dabbling at songwriting as a young teenager. But I, you know, I didn't know how to get into it, but busking in Galway got me into it.
What year was that?
1993, I left secondary school and headed for England. So I was, you know, during my teenage years, I was doing that. And I got back to Galway in 1994, I think. I think 1996 there, head isn't what it used to be.
So from there, what was the next step?
The next step then, I got known in Galway, and the band I was in happened to be a very, very popular band in Galway. At the time, the Commitments were a huge thing in Ireland, and they had their own band from the movie going, and then there was us. The name of the band was the Horny Devils, which my grandmother just used to crack up at this, the name of the band. But that was the name of the band. They were called the Horny Devils. And through that, I was able to get jobs with other bands in Galway. Made my name that way, you know.
And did you come back to Donegal then shortly after that?
No, I stayed in Galway. 2005, I came home. My grandmother died in 2005. And we were very close. We were two peas in a pod, the pair of us. And her death affected me quite a bit. And I felt just this real strong pull to come home to Donegal. So I packed up after 10 years in Galway and I headed home.
So another new chapter.
Another new chapter here. I came home actually, you're going to laugh at this. I came home to join the Guards. I thought, that's it, I'm giving up music. It's not going anywhere. I haven't become famous. I'm not making money. I'm going to be a guard, just like my father. And I went back to secondary school in Glenties in St. The Comp, as we call it, St. Columba's Comprehensive. And I resat my leaving cert at the grand old age of 30. Sat in with the kids.
How was that experience?
It was great. Do you know something? They were the greatest bunch, I have to say. And they took me, you know, I was like, ooh, somebody old's coming into the class, you know.
What prompted you to decide to go back to the books, Tanya?
When I said earlier on that I hadn't got my leaving cert when I left for England, I rebelled. That's the only way, to be honest with you.
Did you carry that hang-up of not having completed?
And even in Galway, you know, with my friends, and they'd be discussing, oh, I got this in the Leaving Cert, and it was always just a wee craw in me that I never got it, and I wanted to prove to myself that I could do it, that I wasn't stupid. And yeah, I went back and did it, and I passed it with flying colours. And Dad talked me out of being a guard in the year that it took me to do the Leaving Cert.
So was it just back to music then, was it?
Back to music, yeah. Dad was like, you don't want to be a guard, Tanya, you really don't, you know. It's a different job now. As we all know, it is a different job. And he said, your talent's music.
The last 18 months, we've talked about it even before we started recording, Tanya. Thankfully, we're in a better place now. Mm. But the music industry and the entertainment industry in Ireland has undergone a massive, obviously, stop, first of all. The pause button has been lifted and is slowly getting back to normality again. Talk to me about what it has been like for the last year. I know you started back maybe March, April time in terms of virtual gigging, but in terms of your normal week and your normal routine to suddenly not doing it at all and not having the option to do it.
Yeah, for me, the COVID pandemic came at a very strange and wonderful time in my life. Things were really starting to take off for me. I had started booking, you know, theatre venues. I decided I'm not doing pubs anymore, I'm just doing theatres. And every single show I booked somewhere sold out, which was brilliant for me. And then, bang, it hit. And it's like, what am I going to do now? You know, there was nothing. A lot of artists were able to go on the PUP, and a lot of artists weren't due to different reasons. In my case, it was medical. And I was left with nothing. I'm not kidding you, it was nothing. And I was like, what do I do now?
How worrying was that at that time, Tanya?
Very, very stressful. Very stressful. And if I hadn't the support of Heather, I don't know what I would have done. I'm really mean that. And I know there's a lot of musicians out there, not just musicians, sound men, women, lighting crews, backstage crews. We're all in the same boat. And there was a lot of mental health issues around this. People were genuinely freaking over this. This was a very, very scary time. To go from earning money and paying tax on it to earning no money, and then you're worrying about my tax bill's going to come in at the end of the year. Well, what do I do? I have no money. You know, it was just, it's unprecedented, you know. And we'd very little support from the government, you know.
Were you in conversation with some of your fellow performers and fellow artists, and how were they feeling about that?
We were all in the same boat. I mean, some of my fellow artists who'd be quite famous, we're all in the same boat. There was nothing. And the revenue you see from albums is gone. Streaming pays nothing. Irish radio pays nothing, really. We've only got like a 15% take up of Irish acts on Irish radio, as opposed to France's 40%. So we had nothing. We had no incomes, no royalties. It was really scary, you know. It was.
Is this an opportunity now, Tanya, for maybe review and maybe do things better for your industry?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Ireland is known. All the tourists come into Ireland. Where can we go to hear music? Where's such and such playing? Ireland is known for the music. We export our musicians all over the world. They go play gigs. They're loved. They're revered everywhere except Ireland. Do you know? And that's kind of a bitter pill to swallow. And I would love to see if we could organise ourselves into championing ourselves and getting the government to back us up. You know, there's other countries that musicians are backed up and you're allowed to be a musician. You know, back in the day when we were all musicians in Galway, we all used to laugh. I mean, I'm talking 30 years ago. The dole queues would be full of musicians on a Thursday morning, you know, because you'd earn a couple of pounds doing a gig, but you couldn't survive on it. You know, and there was other countries at the time paying musicians to learn music and enrich their countries, because it brings in tourism and people, you know. It'd be great to organise something.
It's been a slow return back to normality. Can you talk me through your journey this year in terms of getting back performing?
Yeah, getting back performing for me was a bit of a slow one. I had a couple of health issues last year with the old heart. Strangely, because of COVID, I got them sorted. I have health insurance, but I wasn't able to get into the matter private in Dublin. But when COVID hit, all the health went to a one-tier system. So I was able to get the best surgery from the best surgeon in the country, and he fixed my heart, which is fantastic. And I had great help from the hospital up there with Dr. David and his crew. So it was a bit slow recovery-wise for me to get back into it. And so I had a gig then. The Errigal Arts Festival asked me, would I close the Errigal Arts Festival for them this year? And I was overjoyed. First gig back. Can't wait.
What was that like?
I didn't get that far. I was diagnosed with COVID the day of the gig. You couldn't write it.
Like, what was plan B?
You couldn't write it. So, unfortunately, that gig has been postponed. It will be rescheduled down in Rathmullen House at a later date.
It must have been a huge disappointment.
You have no idea.
I mean, it was a double whammy, wasn't it?
It was a double whammy because, first of all, I got COVID. I was fully vaccinated and I got it from someone who was vaccinated, and it was the Delta variant. And, you know, it was like, bang, what do you do? So I just sat home and said, right, just get better.
So when was your first live gig?
My first Oakfest which was a fabulous festival. One of the best run festivals, not taken away from other festivals out there, but I have to give due credit where credit's due. Brilliant festival. Brilliantly run. They had two stages, and whilst one band was playing, the other band was setting up, and the other band would go, thank you very much, stop. The next band would pick up. The other band would set up. It was, you know, there were stalls, there was food, people were there. It was just a lovely occasion.
Is there a big future for that event?
I hope so, and I hope they get the government funding that they so richly deserve. I mean, we could have a massive festival out there every year. There's no reason why we shouldn't. It's, the setup is perfect.
Tanya, you lost a very good friend, an icon, and an idol when John Prine passed away last year in April. Can you talk to me about that?
John. John Prine. I was blessed to be picked by John to go on tour with him, to be around him, to be in his company.
How did that come about, Tanya?
I played the pubs for years, as you know, and John's sister-in-law and her husband would come in to see me, and unbeknownst to me, they were sending videos to John Prine and Fiona in Nashville of me singing. And I got a call one night after a gig, would I be interested in touring with John Prine in 2018? Well, I hit the roof. Yes, of course, I'd be interested in touring.
Was it Stuff of Dreams, was it?
Oh, Stuff of... John was my idol, you know. It'd be like Kris Kristofferson asking me to play, or, you know, or Elvis or somebody. But John as a songwriter was one of my idols. I never in a million years thought John Prine like me, or my singing, or my writing.
When did you get that call, and where were you?
I had come home from one of the worst gigs I had ever done. It was a horrible gig.
Where was that?
I'm not telling you. I can't tell you.
I had to ask.
You had to ask. No, that's fair enough. But I came home, and I was getting the gear out of the car, throwing it in the hall, and shouting to Heather, I'm finished, I quit, I'm done. And the phone rings, and I let a squeal out. And Heather says, did we win the Euro Millions? And I went, no, we're going on tour with John Prine. So that's how that came about. They decided, they had 20 names, apparently. Most of those names had Grammy Awards under their belts. But John said, no, I want to play with Tanya this time. Give her a chance.
Was some vote of confidence in yourself?
Oh, from the top. From the top, and it is absolutely... without question, had a massive impact in my career so far.
What was it like sharing the stage with John Prine?
I remember being in Oslo. I remember being side stage at the sound check, and Heather was with me, and we were like, that's John Prine. That's John Prine. I'm about to sing with John Prine. And I walked out on stage, and he's like, hey, Tanya. And I'm like, hello, John. And he says, let's give this one a go. So we sang it, and the guy at the sound desk goes, okay, John, we'll run that again. And he went, we don't need to. She's got it. You know, what more can you say?
And when did you get news that John had passed away last year?
Well, I initially found out John had COVID. It was on social media. Fiona had caught COVID. They were in Ireland. They were actually in Ardra. And I thought, I'll go and meet them and say hi. But then I thought, they're on holidays, I'll let them be. I'm meeting them in London next week. We were supposed to go on tour together. So I get a call from them that John's hip was playing up. And they called me from Paris and said, listen, we got to go home to Nashville. We're going to reschedule all the London, England gigs. I says, no problem. So then that was in March, end of February, March. And then Fiona had caught COVID. And John was isolating away from her downstairs. But on the day Fiona got out of quarantine, I believe, John came down with symptoms. And, I mean, we just prayed hard for that man for, I think it was 10 days. You know, and he still hung in there and he was still fighting to live. And, it got him. I was devastated. I'm still devastated. Just devastated.
Tanya, you're preparing for a very important gig as a celebration of John's life and times and songwriting.
Yeah, I was contacted earlier this year by Fiona saying that John's immediate family were going to do a one-off special gig from Ireland, and would I be interested in playing in it? And I was like, of course I'd be interested in playing in it. So they said to me, this is happening now on the 4th of October, in the McLally Theatre in Galway. We've got some great names. Everybody on this has a personal connection to John. They've gigged with him. They knew him well. They played with him. You know, Paul Brady's on it. Mary Black is on it. Mary Stokes is on it. Sharon Shannon, Declan O'Rourke, myself, Ruth McGill from Ardragh as well, who would be Fiona's cousin. Excellent singer. So we all have a personal thing here with John. And, yeah, it's going to be a really special night. It'll be televised live. Tickets can be bought online at the McLally Theatre. And the gig will be happening live in Galway. And people can sit in their sitting rooms and watch it live. And it will be broadcast. People in Nashville will be seeing it, and people in Ireland. So,
Somewhat ironic that you're going back to Galway for such a significant gig. That's where you started out.
I know. But you see, John had such a personal connection with Galway as well. They lived in Kinvara. They had a wee house there. So Galway was very personal to John, you know. But it's like I was told the other day, these are all the people John would have gathered around him for a night's crack and singing and fun and friends and storytelling. And that's basically what we'll be doing. John Creedon, he's going to be emceeing it. So he'll ask us all our wee stories.
Tell me, Tanya, if you weren't performing and singing and songwriting, what do you think you'd be doing with your life?
What would I be doing in my life? I would be in the wilds of America somewhere, breaking horses or riding horses. I'd be trying to be a cowgirl or something.
have you been?
I have horses. I have horses in my blood all my life. I love that idea of just dropping everything and just going. And no connections, you know, no phone, no emails, just heading away. That's it.
Is this something that you still would have ambition to do?
Not at all. I love me comfy beds and me good food and things like that. I'd probably be useless at it. But that's the romantic dream, you know, riding off into the sunset. And
you've been in the music industry quite a few years. Any major change or changes of note in that time?
Yeah, it's gotten to be very fast. It's gotten to be very impersonal. And
what does the fast mean?
Turnover. Bands, famous one day, gone the next. Public interest. There's almost an overexposure of music, in my opinion. Now, we're of the same generation here. You go into an elevator, there's music. You go into a bar, there's music. You go into a shop, there's music. It's everywhere. Your ringtone is music. So people can, I think, switch off to a degree. It's just, it's fast. Everything's fast and is, you know. But, music has changed. Talent, I would love to say that the talent is what should be there. But there's a lot of people, you know, who are so talented. And they're just not getting the recognition that they deserve. And they're finding it incredibly hard to make a living, you know, which is an awful shame. But once record companies gave over power to accountants in the music business, that talent was never going to be a thing anymore. You know, would Bob Dylan make it today? Would Neil Young or Joni Mitchell? Would John Prine? Would they make it today? No, I don't think they would. Or they'd be underground.
Tell me, what advice would you give your 21-year-old self?
To be myself, to definitely be myself, to find out, to stop copying other singers and other people and performers. When I started out, I would have been a little bit of a copycat. I could sing like Tina Turner or I could sing like Elvis. But the person that people have identified most with is Tanya McCall. Definitely be myself earlier, you know, and to be braver. To be braver and stick to my instinct. Yeah. I got talked out of a lot of things by a lot of people that I shouldn't have let them talk me out of.
Can you give me an example?
I would go to do something and say, I'm going to send this to such and such a record producer. Ah, no, don't bother. I've done that. You'll never make it. You're not good enough. You know, I hear that a lot over the last 20 years. You're not good enough. You'll never make it. So I would tell my 21-year-old self, don't listen to them and be brave. Just plough ahead, girl.
how do you see the future for live music in Ireland and the entertainment industry in general?
It's there for the taking. It's there. We have fantastic pubs. I mean, we're here. So I'm sitting in McGinley's here today. McGinley's have music before the COVID 7 nights a week, nearly guaranteed 7 nights a week. Tourists come to town. Where's the music? McGinley's. I'm not dissing any other pub here in town. I'm genuinely not. But it's there for the taking. You know, pay musicians what they're worth. People have this perception that musicians just have fun all the time. We get drunk and it's wildcrack. And yes, it is wildcrack. Yeah. But like, I've done gigs where I've left Donegal at 12 o'clock. I've driven to Cork, set up, waited for the gig to happen. By the time it happens and I get my gear down, it's maybe 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. I then have to drive back to Donegal. You know, and people go, oh, you're making great money. And you kind of go, that was a 19-hour day. Not really.
Do you feel it's taken maybe the pandemic
to expose?
To let people know that there is so much goes on behind the scenes that people don't see.
Yeah, I think there has definitely been more publicity about it this time. Whereas people would not have been aware of this. Definitely, you know, even in regard to car insurance, it is impossible as a musician in this country nearly to get car insurance. And say you're a musician, the premiums are, I might as well be 14 and driving. Do you know? So things like that, it has brought to light that people weren't aware of that we were having to go through. And I know chefs and other people have the same problems. They all think we're out drinking. That's my job. Why would I jeopardise it by drinking? You know, so we're being penalised for things. And I think that has brought it to the forefront for some people.
With the exception of John Prine, are there any other people who have influenced you greatly in your musical life?
Musically, well, actually, I have to say, my dad's records at home.
Talk to me about that collection.
Dad's records at home were the staple of my musical backbone and my childhood. He had Kris Kristofferson, Porter Wagoner, Jerry Lee Lewis. I remember the night he came home with Fats Domino. I'd never heard of Fats Domino. And he got me up out of bed at about 1 o'clock in the morning. And he says, come here, do you hear this? You know, this is what he did. Dad and I would frequently blow speakers and stereos. How high can we turn it up, Dad? Come on, we'll see. Do you know, he was a major man for the music.
So that's where the seeds were sown?
Oh, absolutely. There's music in both sides of my family, without doubt. My sister's a great singer. My other sister, God rest her, she was a great singer. Poor Shane, my brother, now, that leaves a lot to be desired, his singing. No offence, Shane. But, listen, we're all singers. We're all musical. We all love music. So it was definitely ingrained in me as a kid. But Dad's records, unreal. I have those records all today still. I got them. They disappeared for a while, but I got them back by a stroke of luck. And I have Daddy's records, and just makes me so happy to have them.
And finally, Tanya, what lies ahead for yourself and your career now going forward?
So what lies ahead for me? At the moment, I am trying to just see what is going to happen with this pandemic. Unfortunately, a lot of artists have booked gigs and are having to cancel. Like, I believe Daniel had to cancel 4 dates in Britain this week. Even in America, the John Prine thing was to happen in the month of October. That was to be a week-long event with some really famous people in famous theatres and venues. They had to cancel that because of COVID. So I don't know, can I go ahead and book things, you know, because it's soul-destroying to have to book and cancel. So I'll just wait and maybe just continue to try and keep writing at home and maybe have a new album out, you know.
Tanya McCall, singer-songwriter, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today on Business Matters.
It's my pleasure, thank you.
Well, that's it for this edition of Business Matters. Thanks to my guests, Michael Tunney and Tanya McCall. Thanks to Kenneth Wilson on sound. And thanks to you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, drop an email to businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Business Matters, in association with the LYIT Faculty of Business. Do you want to learn how to tap into unprecedented opportunities in the food and drink industry? Then join our Higher Diploma in Food Product Innovation and Enterprise. This course is 100% online and co-funded by Donegal Local Enterprise Office. Visit lyit.ie for more information.